Chapter 4. Idris. Magda was an Earth-like planet, cold but with a relatable biochemistry. Back before, the colony had already been expanding, the original founders becoming an overclass above a mass of new colonists, introduced to run the expanding agricultural industry. Magda was the largest exporter of foodstuffs to overburdened Earth. After, refugees had fled to Magda in their millions, knowing only that here was a planet with room for them. And the planet's landowners, the Boyarin, had taken in everyone, turned not one ship away. Which sounded grand until you understood that to set foot on Magda was to accept the life they gave you, one of service in the factories or fields. It was never quite slavery under Hugh definitions, but then Magda was one of the big dogs of Hugh. Remarkable how the authorities there could end up not quite any number of bad things. The word most enlightened outsiders applied to Magdan society was serfdom. The Boyarin themselves called the system the robot, which seemed to adequately sum up how they regarded the mass of their people. It was one of the Boyarin themselves who came to look in on Rollo and Idris shortly after they were consigned to one of Roshu Admin's holding cells. He looked young, although the Boyarin were certainly amongst those few with the wherewithal for a long life. His clothes were flamboyant, a loose-sleeved shirt of shimmering orange, hand-embroidered at the throat and cuffs, tight trousers and tight boots, a black half-cloak ornamented with gold. His body was lean and fit, his coldly handsome features graced with a small upwards-tilted moustache and a neat scar that curved from the corner of his mouth to his ear. The Magdan elite liked their jewels, Idris had heard. His heavies, presumably Voyeni, house guards, stood impassively after announcing him as the Boyarin Paita Jeva Uskaro. Paita Uskaro was all skin-deep smiles, and he had eyes for Idris alone.
"What fortune attends our meeting?" he announced.
It was as if his guests weren't stuck in a cramped oven-hot metal box with one clear plastic wall. His tones, heavy with the Magdan accent, came to them through a speaker in the ceiling.
"Your grandness, there's been some mistake," Rollo tried. "We're just salvagers. We're no criminals. I can provide references, work history."
Uskaro waved the virtual paperwork aside, still grotesquely pleasant, as though just waiting for a servant to turn up with wine.
"Deep void work, yes, which means you have in your possession a rare gem, a commercial intermediary. Yet imagine my surprise when I asked after the details of your leash contract with the liaison board. And alas, none is filed."
He rolled his eyes, as though they were all just victims of Hugh bureaucracy.
"Which can only mean that your man here is a fugitive from his contract and you have been abetting him. I'm sure it's witless, Captain Rostand." "Do I mean witless? Innocent, maybe, is the word. I'm sure you had no idea your man here was a dangerous renegade fleeing the service he owes to his people. Bad trouble, Captain. Very bad. You will, of course, be grateful when I take him off your hands. It is not the first time such a one has been apprehended by the Boyarin's tireless efforts in our drive for justice. We spearhead the advancement of our species, Captain. Our tireless navigators seek out throughways as yet undiscovered, that we may open up a wealth of planets hitherto hidden from us. The future of humanity, Captain. Fresh colonies, perhaps even new originator sites. Treasures beyond imagining.
His teeth were blinding white and perfectly even when he smiled. Idris squinted into the sun of that expression and wasn't fooled. His fight or flight response was screwing his body into overdrive. Awkward, given he could do neither.
What, he managed, did your last int die of?
That perfect smile didn't falter.
It so happened that my family's best navigator suffered a mishap. How lucky for me that we were able to locate a replacement so swiftly. I am just concluding the legalities with Roshul Kybernet, after which we shall be off. And then I shall decide whether charges should be filed against your captain here as your accomplice. Perhaps a residual concern for his well-being will encourage you to accept your rightful lot. It's time you served the species that made you what you are. Your grandness, Rollo started, he is not under leash. He is a free man. You have no right.
Oscaro gave him the look of a man who can purchase any right he wishes.
The Kybernet is processing the matter now, Captain Rostand. I shall return shortly to take possession of my new property. What happens to you depends on your decorum between now and then.
When he was gone, Rollo sat on the floor and stared at his sandaled feet.
Fuck all paymasters, he said.
Less a specific jibe at Oscaro, so much as a familiar spacer oath. Idris was still standing. He couldn't sit. His skinny body was vibrating with adrenaline which had nowhere to go.
I will fight, he decided. I will not go.
And he knew they couldn't force him, not really. They couldn't make him navigate for them. But they could beat and brutalize him, condition him, drug him, drive implants into his brain, until his ability to resist their demands had been pared down to nothing. Mostly with the liaison board ints, the commercial ints, it wasn't necessary. They came pre-compliant, resigned to drudgery, until the horrors of Unspace unhinged them. But when one of them went renegade and fled, well, you heard all sorts. And he wasn't renegade. He'd never been on a leash. But it wasn't the first time someone had made the convenient assumption, and this time Chris wasn't here to sort it out.
I won't go,
he said, because the thought had bounced back and forth in his head so much it had to escape.
We'll jump them, Rollo suggested. On the way to their ship!
As though Rollo would even be getting out of the cell, Idris thought.
Or we'll come after you.
As though they could, without Idris in the pilot's chair.
We'll... something!
As though there was anything. Around 55 years back, in the heart of the war, the freighter Samark exited Unspace to find every wartime pilot's worst nightmare, an architect bearing down on them. They were bound for Fourth Bridge Port, packed to the gills with displaced refugees. Faced with their imminent demise, the crew started packing people into shuttles and escape pods, of which there was an entirely inadequate supply. Meanwhile, the architect reached out for them, intent on peeling the ship and arranging the hull into a configuration more pleasing to its alien aesthetics. Yet, even as it began to warp the hull, it stopped. For a long moment, the passenger freighter and the colossal alien entity hung there in space, both speeding towards Fourth Bridge Port. Then, it withdrew. For the first time ever, an architect just went away. What happened on board the Samark became legend. The most popular media type showed one of the passengers, a girl of 15, running onto the bridge. She was clutching her head, speaking in tongues, blood running from her nose. What was clear to everyone was that Xavier Torino had somehow made the architect leave. Her own testimony confirmed she'd forged a link between them, mind to mind. She had been the first intermediary, a natural. Over the next decade, humanity's best scientists would work with Saint Xavier, as she became known, to try and replicate her abilities. The new corps would get its first outing at the Battle of Berlinhof in 78 after, and would go on to end the war. But before that, everyone had realised ints were good for more than just driving away architects. That same uncanny sense let them tap into the fabric of unspace, to navigate beyond the established throughways in a way no instrument or device could. Some species could manage something similar, the Castigar and the Hegemony, for example, but even with them it was rare, and humanity had abruptly joined that select club. Ints went from being a secret weapon to a trading advantage. So the Liaison Board was born. They took in humanity's unwanted, and they turned out a handful of commercial intermediaries through harsh conditioning and unrelenting surgery. All who survived the programme left under leash contracts, making them nothing but property until they'd paid back the colossal cost of their treatment, which meant, to all intents and purposes, never. Idris was a free man, created before the board existed. But who would believe him? And almost all the other free wartime ints were dead. These cheery thoughts occupied him, until the Boyarin Piter Cheva Uscaro returned, with his retinue, to take possession.
"All is achieved," he said cheerfully to the two station guards.
One opened the cell so a Voyeni trooper could pull Idris out, the other ensured Rollo stayed inside. Then they hauled him out to the clerk's office, where the staff did their best not to notice what was going on.
"Look at your face like thunder," Uscaro remarked dryly to Idris. "You'd think you didn't want to serve humanity. You don't want people to take you for a betrayer, do you?"
Idris noted that the word was given a particular spin, and he suppressed a shudder. The pro-humanity nativists had a strong foothold on Magda, and they talked a great deal about betrayal. By the Parthenon, by aliens, by intermediaries, somehow in league with architects. Anything to explain why humans didn't run the universe. Idris faced up to the man, as much as he could given their difference in heights.
"Your Elegance, let it be known that, should you make me your navigator, I vow to guide that ship into the deep void where monsters dwell. I will wake everyone aboard so your people may experience the nightmares of unspace. Once they've gone mad, torn out each other's throats and driven their own thumbs into their eyes, I will paint on the walls with their blood. Salvagers will find these words: the Boyarin Piter Cheva Uscaro did this, who is no respecter of human freedoms."
He felt a wash of catharsis, then immediately knew he'd gone too far. Uscaro's face had closed like a trap, the fake smile vanishing. A tightening grip on his arms told him that the two Voyeni were going to give him a beating as a matter of honour, and their master would plainly enjoy watching Idris learn his place. But perhaps not before these witnesses. So Uscaro merely nodded tightly and march towards the exit, Bavoyeni pulling Idris along in his wake. Yet the doors didn't open, and one of the clerks called out from behind them.
"Kaibanet says to hold the int,"
she explained, when faced with Ascaro's disbelieving stare.
"Administrative matter."
When he demanded an explanation, she shrugged.
"Don't know, Your Elegance. Doesn't say. Just routine."
A movement at floor level caught Idris's attention as he hung between the Voyeni. Like a rodent, a spider, a hand, a scuttling shape of metal and plastic. He knew it, of course. It was one of Medvig's remotes, detached from the Hiver's frame, come over to say hello. Seeing that it had his attention, it carefully balanced on three of its fingers and curled the rest in until it had made a creditable thumbs up.
Bless you, Medvig.
Somehow they'd found him. Now, he just had to worry about Rollo. When the outer door opened, it was Chris they all saw, and she already had Rollo free and clear beside her. She must have extracted him from the cells via some other route.
"What is this?"
Ascaro stared at her.
"Why is this man free? And who is this woman?"
He was briefly too baffled to be angry.
"Your Elegance, I am Kerestina Sulin Almier, acting as certified advocate to the Hugh Civil Court for my client Idris Telemier."
Ascaro made a little spitting noise of utter incredulity.
"It is not permitted, a lawyer. It is under a leash contract."
"I am now calling upon the Roshu Kaibanet to act as arbiter," Chris announced grandly. "Respond, if you please."
The voice emanating from the clerk's console was flat and affectless.
"Presence confirmed for the stated purpose. I request the release of my client, imprisoned under false pretenses. I have filed a request for damages, plus compensation for emotional trauma and loss of liberty against the family Ascaro. These will be dealt with under separate hearing once my client is freed."
"He cannot be your client,"
Ascaro hissed at her. Then he protested to the air, as the Kaibanet had no physical presence.
"It is property under a leash contract."
The clerk, who looked as though she was enjoying herself, threw data up on a wall screen. Idris's birth records from 70 years ago. Idris's war record. Idris's work history. Idris, old beyond his face. Ascaro's own features went slack, realizing simultaneously the sheer value of what he had seized and that he wasn't legally able to keep it. One of the original wartime ints, with all those decades of skill and experience, but, for that selfsame reason, out of his reach.
"But he's
old enough to be your revered grandpa, Boyarin. Real, real old."
A grin from Chris, and Idris thought sourly,
"Thanks for that."
"I look forward to your depositions regarding compensation, Your Elegance," she finished up brightly. "Doubtless your lawyers will be in touch."
She reached forward to take Idris's wrist, and as simply as that, he was out of the Voyeni's grasp. Medvig's artificial spider hand scurried up to sit on Chris's shoulder, and Idris guessed the Hiver would have circumvented the office's privacy screens to transmit events to the rest of the crew.
"Now, let's walk proudly out of Roshu admin like free citizens of the colonies," Chris said quietly. "Then let's get the fuck to the ship as quick as we can."
She glanced back, and Idris did too, meeting Ascaro's bleak, hungry gaze.
"I don't think the Boyarin will restrict himself to legal measures."